Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim, daf Tzadi Dalet. It's a big daf in Pesachim. It's a big daf in Shas. You'll see why as we get to it. In the meantime, however, let's just finish up what we left off from Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis. And we are six lines before the Mishnah. Okay, Pesach Sheni, it's a big question that we dealt with yesterday in yesterday's daf, and that is, what is Pesach Sheni? Is it its own independent yontif? It's perhaps a makeup date for Pesach Rishon, or perhaps it's just it's part two of part one. So three opinions amongst the time. There was the opinions of Rabbi Nassan, and Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya. So Rabbi's position is the most unilateral, the most basic, and that is, Pesach Sheni is just its own independent day. It's a yontif. It's a regel b'fnei atzmo. It's its own independent yontif. And consequently, as the Gemara pointed out in yesterday's daf, according to Rebbe, that means that if you, let's say, you have a ger who converts between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, or if I have a child who is gadol, who becomes an adult between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, he's got to bring a carbon. Pesach Sheni is not just a missed opportunity for Pesach Rishon, but Pesach Sheni is, in fact, its own and separate day. As Rebbe points out, and the Gemara will tell us in just a moment, we haven't seen the Gemara yet inside, so you have two opportunities to incur the Karis penalty. One for Pesach Rishon, one for Pesach Sheni. Now, as we discussed yesterday, Karis is only incurred if you've been mazed it deliberately, intentionally, do not offer the carbon Pesach. So let's say you're a shogeg on Pesach Rishon, but you're a mazed on Pesach Sheni. So according to Rebbe, you're going to be chayav Karis, meaning that's they're both equal opportunity Karis providers. I don't know if that, you know, you want to quote me on that or you want to roll with that, but that's basically, according to Rebbe, that's what each Pesach would represent. Then there was the opinion of Rabbi Nassan. Rabbi Nassan says, no, that's not the way to view Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is not its own separate holiday, but it's an attachment, it's an addendum to Pesach Rishon. Now, it's not going to be Mesakin, meaning it won't correct Pesach Rishon. If you didn't bring Pesach Rishon, and you didn't do so b'mezid, you can't make it up on Pesach Sheni, so it won't be a correction, it'll just simply be a makeup date. If you missed b'shogeg or ba'onis, you missed, you were derech rechoka, you were tameh. If you missed Pesach Rishon, so then you have a chance to make it up on Pesach Sheni, but it cannot undo a karis that was incurred on Pesach Rishon. That's the opinion of Rabbi Nassan. And finally, the third opinion is Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya. Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya says it's a combination. It's the 1-2 punch. That Pesach Rishon is your first chance of bringing the Karban Pesach. If you fail to do so, and even if you fail to do so, b'mezid, you won't get Karis, according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya, until you also intentionally do not bring the Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni as well. So in other words, basically the Torah gives you two chances, and even if you failed on the first chance, meaning not just missed it, but even if you failed on the first chance, you're still going to get a chance to make it up on Pesach Sheni. That is according to Rabbi Chananya ben Akavya.
I mentioned
Mezid means intentional, meaning you did so on purpose. I mentioned yesterday the Rambam is of the opinion that the halacha follows like Rebbe. Generally speaking, the Rambam's taking Rebbe's position that it's regel b'fnei atzma. Now, you want to see all this come to another ramification, another halachic reality, and that's the following. This is where we left off yesterday. Hilkach, therefore, we are 5-6 lines before the Mishnah. I'm sorry to give him a base. It's the last word in the line. Hilkach, chesib, zev, zed, divra, akol, chayev. So let's say you're amazed on both Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. So in other words, for both of those Pesach opportunities, you're defiant, and you say, look, I know what today is. I'm not going to bring the Karban Pesach. I'm not interested. I don't want any part of it. So you're going to be Chayav Karis. Now, as Rashi pointed out in yesterday's daf, I'm just reiterating what we already said yesterday, you're not going to be Chayav Karis twice. That's not the case. Karis you only get once. It just simply means that both, if you're amazed on both, according to every position, Rabbi Nassan and Rabbi Chananya and Bekavya, you're going to be Chayav Karis. Shogeg b'zev v'zid divrei kol pater. Now, if you're shogeg on both, so you inadvertently forgot that it was Pesach Rishon, and then a month later you forgot again, meaning legitimate forgetting. So then, according to everyone, you're going to be pater, because remember, as we said yesterday, the only way to incur the Karis penalty is if you intentionally ignore The Pesach and the bringing of the carbon Pesach. But if you forget on both, you're going to be put according to everyone. He's the Berisha v'Shagig B'Sheni. So now let's watch each position come to life. If let's say you're amazing on Pesach Rishon and you're a Shogeg on Pesach Sheni. So the first Pesach you were defiant, and then the second Pesach you forgot. You were going to make it up, but you forgot. So Le Rabbi Nelson Mechayev. So according to Rabbi and Rabbi Nelson Mechayev, because as we pointed out yesterday's daf, according to both Rabbi and Rabbi Nelson, that means that you are Pesach Rishon is really it, meaning that's Pesach, and the fact that you were amazing on Pesach Rishon, you're going to be Chayev. And even according to Rabbi Nelson, who says that the Pesach Sheni is a makeup, but it's only a makeup if you missed Pesach Rishon. Here you didn't miss Pesach Rishon. You knew about Pesach Rishon. You were defined about Pesach Rishon. So even according to Rabbi Nelson, you're going to be Chayev Karis. Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya Potter. And according to Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya, you're going to be Potter. Why? Because as we pointed out, according to Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya, you're only going to be Chayev Karis if you fail on both Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. Shagag Berishon Vehizet B'Sheni. So let's go the other way. Let's say on the first Pesach you were a shogeg, you forgot, you missed the calendar, you just woke up in the morning not realizing it's the 14th day of Nisan and you forgot. And then when you get to Pesach Sheni, you know what? You say to yourself, you know, never mind. In other words, I know it's Pesach Sheni, I know I have another chance to do so, but never mind. So the Rebbe Chayev. So according to Rebbe, you're going to be Chayev. Remember why? Because according to Rebbe, each Pesach, both Rishon and Sheni, are its own separate day. It's its own independent entity. Each one of them has the ability to incur the Karis penalty. So even if you're just amazed on Pesach Sheni, you're still going to be Chayev Karis. And the Rabbi Nelson, Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya Potter. And according to Rabbi Nelson, Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya, you're going to be Potter. Why? So according to Rabbi Nelson, that's because really the Iker Pesach is Pesach Rishon. Pesach Sheni is just a makeup date, but that's all it is. It's just a makeup date. So you're not going to incur the Karis penalty for deliberately ignoring Pesach Sheni. And what about according to Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya? So according to Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya, it's a 1-2 punch, meaning that the Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni are like two halves of a whole. Not the best analogy, but in other words, just you need both. You need to excuse me. You need to defiantly ignore both days in order to incur the Karis penalty. Here, you only defiantly ignore the second Pesach, but not the first. So you're not going to be Chayev Karis, according to Rabbi Chanan ben Akavya. And so, therefore, you could see how each one of these positions plays out. If in the event that I'm mazing in both, I'm shogeg in both, I'm mazing in one, depending on which one, the first or the second, and you get to see all these positions play themselves out. And again, as I pointed out, the Rambam goes like Rabbi, so that means that according to the Rambam, each one is treated as its own separate day.
In general, is there any
Tshuva for Kavetz? Yeah, the Rambam discusses that in Hilchos Tshuva. He talks about yeah, in other words, no, that I don't know. Meaning, tshuva is going to be able to just, to erase the kares and that I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. Okay, we start now. I'll say we'll start with today's daf, even though we're still on daf Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis, but basically we're starting the sugya that's going to lead into today's daf, and that is the following. We know the Torah describes two exemptions, or two, not exemptions, but two reasons why, two justifications why you didn't bring Pesach Rishon. Either, number one, you're Tameh, which we dealt with back in the Mishnah. We've been talking at length over the course of these last number of Prakim in Psachim. And the other one is you're Derech Rechok, you're far away. Now, it's a funny thing, Derech Rechoka, meaning, before we even start with the Mishnah, meaning you didn't put yourself in a winning position, meaning a lot of success in life just simply means, and this is not me trying to, play, life coach over here, but part of life is just putting yourself in a winning position. So, in other words, you're Derech Rechoka, I'm so far away from the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, but you knew Pesach was coming, and all you needed to do was just start making your way over there, and you'd be good. In other words, you'd be in a good position, and this guy is not. Okay, so I understand that his management skills over his time is definitely wanting. He could definitely plan a little bit better, but let's just deal with the reality that we have right now. He's not in the vicinity of the Beis HaMikdash. He's Bederech Rechok, he's far away. So what does the Torah say? Okay, so you're an Ones. You now are considered circumstances beyond your control, and therefore you could bring Pesach Sheni. And so now what the Mishnah is going to deal with is such a simple and straightforward question. And that is, what is Derech Rechoka? What does that mean, you're far away? So we already discussed on yesterday's daf that part of the definition of Derech Rechoka means that you won't be in the Beis HaMikdash during the afternoon. Meaning you may even get there by night, but you're not going to be there in the afternoon. But let's talk now in linear dimensions. What does that mean, Derech Rechoka? So it says the Mishnah, Ezu Derech Rechoka min Amod. All right, so let's start with the Mishnah again. Ezu Derech Rechoka min Amodim Lachutz u'kemid asal achol ruch devei Rabbi Akiva. So first, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and that is draw a line from Yerushalayim or from the Beis HaMikdash to Modi'in. Now, I know there's modern Modi'in, and you never know. Like, the modern Modi'in, is that the same as what the Mishnah is referring to? And speak to somebody in archaeology and somebody who knows Eretz Yisrael, both modern and historical, and you'll get a better perspective, certainly better than what I can provide for you. But anyway, but according to Rabbi Akiva, measure from the Beis HaMikdash to Modi'in, that'll be your radius. Now then now draw a circle with that radius, and basically that's going to be your perimeter. And if you are within the perimeter that we just described, so you're not Bederech Rechoka. If you're outside the perimeter, so you are Bederech Rechoka. That is Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Skufas Azar Valachutz. Rabbi Eliezer has a very interesting opinion, and that is, you're outside the Azara. I mean, Derech Rechoka. You're so far away. You know how far away you are? A step away. Really far. So Amalei Rav Yossi Lefichach Nakod Al Hey. So Rav Yossi says, you know what? He's right. He actually supports the position of Rabbi Eliezer. He's right. In fact, if you look carefully at the Torah, you'll see there's a nekuda. There's a dot over the hay. In other words, where it says Derech Rechoka, you'll see that there's a dot over the hay. Meaning, even in the Sefer Torah, you open up the Sefer Torah and you'll see a dot. Lomer lomim meishirichuk vaday elam iskufas azar v'lachuk v'lachut. It just simply means Derech Rechoka. Anytime you see a dot, there's like a, it's like a minimization. It's like not exactly. So Derech Rechoka, even though literally translated as you're really far away. But the Torah Shabbat Peh, the part of the oral tradition is not so far away. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to, we'll discuss more about the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. But anyway, that is Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. Two interesting Shitas. To tell you something interesting, you open up a Chumash and you take a look at Rashi and Chumash. Rashi explains the Pasuk like Rabbi Eliezer, not like Rabbi Akiva.
Didn't one of the B'nai Chabura bring the carbon for
everything? You didn't need all of the B'nai. Correct, right. I don't know, right. Even according to the Rabbi Eliezer definition in Derech Rechoka, I don't know if it means per se that you per se have to be in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Azara, I mean, as much as many people are in the Azara, there's not room for the entire Jewish population in the Azara. Right, agreed. Amar Ula. Min amodim liyushalayim chamisha asar milin. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to speak in linear measurement. The Mishnah, what the Mishnah provided us for us was a linear measurement, but without actually giving us like a way of actually measuring. So now what the Gemara is going to try to do is provide for us a linear measurement. Now you know the way the Gemara works. The Gemara works in milin. A mil is 2,000 amma. Okay, so. We say, don't take all my numbers too seriously, but we say 2,000 amas is approximately 4,000 feet. In other words, an amma is somewhere in the range of a foot and a half to 2 feet. I like using 2 feet, not because I like being machmir, but just simply because it's a round number. So in other words, 2,000 amas will then translate to about 4,000 feet, so a mil is approximately 4,000 feet. A mile is 5,000, huh? 5,280, thank you. So 5,280, so I'm somewhere in the ballpark, in my estimation, of about 3/4 of a mile. Okay? I'm off, meaning I know I'm not right. I know I'm not exactly right, but just to give us a sense, an idea of what we're talking about when we say mil, so the so Ulus makes a statement that the distance from Modim to Yerushalayim is Chamisha Asar Mil, it's 15 mil, which, you know, you ballpark it, it's about 12 miles, 11 miles, somewhere in that area. I'm just giving a rough estimation. Okay, so Savar La Ki Hada Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Rav Yochanan. So now what the Gemara is going to do is come to a very interesting computation. And you're going to see now a very interesting Gemara. I mean, I'm talking about the totality of today's daf and the remainder of today's daf. You're going to see a very interesting Gemara that's going to blend together halacha and agarata. And it's just interesting. So kama mahalach adam b'yam asar parsos. So how long can a person walk over the totality of a day? So the Gemara puts it at 10 parsos. Okay, the Gemara tested it. It's not exactly clear how the Gemara arrived at that number. It's part of halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. I don't think that's accurate. Okay, however the Gemara arrived at that number, that's the number. So our number for today, the magic number for today, is 10 parsels. Now each parcel is made up of 4 mil, so 10 parsels is 40 mil. Okay, so a person walks 40 mil over the course of a day. And okay, in other words, right.
Miles.
Huh?
It's about 30 miles.
About 30 miles, approximate. So, okay, in other words, you run a marathon. So you're running 26 miles. You're doing so in 2 hours, but that's running a marathon. In other words, the Gemara here is talking about walking. Okay, in other words,
walking speed is 3 miles an hour.
Yeah, 3 miles an hour. Fine. We're in the ballpark. Okay, so me'alos ha'shachar ve'netzachah ma'chamisha milen. Now, from alos ha'shachar to netzachama, meaning there's that time where the sky is light, but the sun didn't rise yet, meaning that's what we call dawn. Or in the Gemara, that's referred to as alos ha'shachar. Up until the point of netzachama, netzachama is actual sunrise. So that's chamisha milen. So that's 5 mil. And mishkias ha'chamay, that's tzeitzo kochavim, chamisha milen. And the time from the sunset until tzeitzo kochavim, that's another 5 mil. So pashalu talsin. So now, oh, by the way, in other words, the Gemara is assuming, right, that the beginning of your walk is not at sunrise, but when it starts to get light outside. So in other words, you're starting your walk at dawn. You're ending your walk at nightfall, meaning not sunset, but later at nightfall. So in other words, so the totality of your walk is going to be 40 mil.
Without any breaks?
No breaks. Okay, maybe it's a couple sips of water, but generally speaking, no breaks. Then what we're going to do is we're going to take away the dawn walk and the night walk, meaning the amount of time between dawn to sunrise and the amount of time from sunset to nightfall. And the Gemara says that that's 5 mil. And again, we're gonna play a little bit with that number over the course of today's daf, but right now we're just saying the pshat in the Gemara. So it's 5 mil for each. So in other words, well, we're deducting now 10 mil. So in other words, from sunrise to sunset, that is now the average, an average person will walk 30 mil. So chamisa mitzafra lepagod diyuma vechamisa mipagod diyuma leorta. And now, what does that give us? It gives us, in other words, just take a day, break it in half, and so therefore 30 divided by 2, that's 15. 15 mil in the morning, 15 mil in the evening, or in the, I should say rather, the afternoon. Good. And that's it. In other words, now you get it. You get it. What, in other words, what do we just understand? We just understand how the distance from Odin to Yerushalayim is 15 mil. In other words, the numbers work. Right? Again, all starting with the assumptions the Gemara started with. But once you have all these assumptions, the numbers work. So now we say that you're derech rechoka, you're far away. We're explaining the Shita Rebbe Akiva. It doesn't mean right outside the threshold of the Azara. It means that you are so far away that you will not be making it to Yerushalayim by the afternoon. So it means that you are half a day's walk away. And that is, a full day is 30. Well, actually, the full day is 40. But what we did is we deducted the pre-sunrise and post-sunset time. We left ourselves with 30 mil, and then we just chopped that in half, and so that's 15 mil. Good. Ula tamidamer ula izu derech rechoka koshin yacholikanis b'shash chita. And ula is consistent with his position, which is that if you can't make it into the Azara by the time of shchita, and we know that the time of shchita ends at sunset, so therefore you consider derech rechoka perfect. So in other words, we have a consistency within the position of ula, both within his understanding of Rabbi Akiva and conforming to his own personal opinion, which is that you have to make it into Yerushalayim by the time of shchita. So the Gemara now is going to try to establish how we got to some of these numbers. We're talking about the destruction of Sodom. And it was shachar, and it was morning. Vayaitzu ha-malachim, and the malachim started pushing them out, like, let's go. Uksiv ha-shemesh yasa ha-la'aretz v'lo batso ara. And the shemesh comes out, meaning, so that was the dawn. So they started walking out of the dome at dawn. And then by shemesh yatsa, the coming of the sun, meaning at sunrise, so Lot arrived at so ara. And how long a walk are we talking about? We're talking about a walk of 5 mil. So it takes from dawn to sunrise to walk 5 mil. Why? Because that's how long it took for him to walk from Sodom to Tzora, which was a 5 mil walk. Good. That's how we got to the number 5 mil.
Wasn't a leisurely walk if he was running?
Well, the Gemara is going to make that point later on this morning. That's an excellent point, and the Gemara is going to come to that point later. The Gemara says, now, we touched on this issue. We're going to spend just a little bit of time over here. Your derech rechoka, your proximity to the Beis HaMikdash is contingent on you being able to be in the Beis HaMikdash by what point? So Ula said the Shechita. Rav Yehuda amar koshin yachol lekanes b'shas achila. Now, Rav Yehuda says, no, you have to be there b'shas achila at the time of eating. So Amalei Rav Ula didcha kasha le Rav Yehuda kasha. So Rabba says, really, questions all around. Meaning, I don't think anyone here is right. Or not that they're not right, but they're difficult positions. Lididcha kasha damar koshin yachol lekanes b'shas achita v'hat tamei sheretz. Den yachol lekanes b'shas achita v'kamar shochtu v'zorken al tamei sheretz. Because look, first of all, we go to a topic that seems to come up almost every day in these parakim, and that is, if somebody's tamei sheretz, can I shecht on his behalf? So again, we know it's a machlokas tanaim, machlokas amoraim, and perhaps even a machlokas rishonim as well. But we also happen to know that your opinion is you can. I don't understand. What do you mean? Your definition of derech rechoka is that you have to be in the azara during the shas hashchita. If you're tamei sheretz, you cannot be in the azara b'shas hashchita. So how does that work? Well, Rav Yehuda kashi dama koshin yachol lekanes b'shas achila v'ha tamei sheretz yachol lekanes b'shas achila v'kamer in shochtem v'zoken al tamei sheretz. And now Rav Yehuda, he's of the opinion that ain't shochtem v'zoken al tamei sheretz. And even though by the time eating rolls around, which will be tonight, not the day, you'll be able to eat. In other words, by tonight, you'll be taur. So I don't understand, Rav Yehuda, your position. Your position is inconsistent with what you normally say, which is that a tamei sheretz cannot shecht the karban Pesach, even though tonight he'll be good. So inconsistency on the part of Ula and on the part of Rav Yehuda. Amar leilo lididi kasha v'lo l'Rav Yehuda kasha. So his response is, no, I'm in the clear. As is Rav Yehuda. Because you are comparing apples and oranges. Look, you're Tamei. Yes, you're outside the Beis HaMikdash. Yes, you're quote-unquote Derech Rechoka. But that's not your impediment. You're not there because you're so far away. You're not there because you're Tamei. So in other words, it's your Tamei which is inhibiting you from going into the Beis HaMikdash. That is why you are disqualified from offering the Karban Pesach or having someone bring on your behalf. It's not because of your distance, it's because of your halachic status of being Tamei. That's apples and oranges. And so, Derech Rechoka L'Tarve, Ein Derech Rechoka L'Tamei. We just don't simply qualify him as the Derech Rechoka because we understand that what's prohibiting from going to the Beis HaMikdash is not distance, but Tumah. And L'Rav Yehuda, now we're on the top of Tzadi Dal Amid Aleph. And L'Rav Yehuda L'Kasha, Tamei Sheretz Rachmana Dachyei. Meaning a Tamei Sheretz, you're right. According to Rav Yehuda, it's all contingent on your ability to eat tonight. And yes, you're right. The Tamei Sheretz will be able to eat tonight. But again, apples and oranges. Once you're Tamei Sheretz, you know what the Torah says to you? You get a pass. Meaning, come back again in a month. The Torah pushes you off. And it has nothing to do with your ability or inability to eat tonight. Yeah, I know you can eat tonight. But once you're Tamei Sheretz on the 14th day of Nisan, the Torah says to you, okay, you get a pass. You now go to Pesach Sheni. Ishish ki yetama nefesh milo askina shechal shvi shalo lios berva Pesach v'yafilo hachi amar rechmana litchei. And the Torah is dealing with a person who is not just Tamei on Erev Pesach, but is even completing his Tamei on Erev Pesach. His seventh day is falling out on Erev Pesach, so that means that tonight will be okay. And still the Torah says, you go to Pesach Sheni. So Rav Yehuda says, look, don't compare the Tamei to the Derech Rechoka. Again, it's the same basic argument. It's apples and it's oranges. Tana Rabbanan. Hayu omei chutz amodim v'yachol likanes besusim v'pradim. Yochel Yechayev. Okay, a great discussion and something that we modern people, quote unquote, can totally relate to. Meaning, we're in Modi'in, by foot, we won't make it there by this afternoon. But we get in our car. Okay, good? Meaning, are we still considered Derech Rechoka? Is Derech Rechoka contingent on the walking distance or Just simply in other words, if I could shrink down that distance by using, the Gemara uses the example of an animal, we'll use the example of a car, is that going to shrink your Derech Rechoka time range? So the Gemara's answer is very simple. Yachli kanes besusim reparni yachli echayv. I might think that I'm obligated. Tamal amar uvederech lo haya. V'hala haya bederech. I'm sorry. V'hala haya bederech haya. So in other words, the derech means the normal method of transport, meaning which is walking. So fine. So in other words, the means of measurement will not be contingent on how you get there, but just simply how far you are away in the distance of walking. Let's say you're within Modim, but traffic is a nightmare, which is understandable, by the way. You're going to Yerushalayim, and so is everyone else. It's like you didn't come up with a brand new idea. Hey, let's go to Yerushalayim. Everyone came up with that idea. It's Pesach. You got to. So in other words, so you're within range, but it's just, it's right, gridlock. So yachol lo yehei chayev tamalamar v'derech lo haya v'arei lo haya v'derech. So in other words, this is interestingly enough, you're going to get hit the other direction. Meaning here, as long as you are within the vicinity, as long as you're within striking range, even though traffic is really at a standstill, you're still going to be obligated. Okay. Huh? And so what you'll do, I mean, the Gemara doesn't, fill out the details, but I guess what you'll do is you have someone else bring it on your behalf. But the point is that you don't get a pass. You don't get that exemption of Derech Rechoka. Okay, here it comes. Some of the more interesting Gemaras that you're going to be seeing over the course of the 7.5 years of Daf Yomi. To put things in perspective, by the way, this is one Daf out of 2,700 Dapim. So in other words, it is extraordinarily interesting. It is the Tanaim and the Amoraim's view of the world, how they actually perceive the world, quote unquote, scientifically, meaning from their empirical viewpoint. And it is interesting, and it certainly refutes or combats things that, quote unquote, we know as being truths of the world. But as you've been around with me long enough, and my position hasn't moved much in the last I don't know how many years. It doesn't bother me, meaning they have a viewpoint, we have a viewpoint. I to think that we're so confidently correct about the way we see the world, we need to humble a little bit in terms of what we know. They have a Masorah, they have a tradition. They knew things which, quite frankly, without Masorah, it's hard to imagine how they would ever arrive at certain truths that they knew about the world around them. So although the Gemara is going to be giving a description of realities of the world, the word reality over here, I think, is not the right way to say it. It's perceptions of the world, meaning they have a certain way they perceive the world. We have a certain way we perceive the world. Those perceptions may not seem to align with one another. So all I'm going to do, and it's really all I can do, is just present the Gemara, present the Pshat in the Gemara, and let the Gemara speak for itself. I don't need to defend the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't need my defense. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But in other words, we're learning Torah, and it speaks to truths that I may not be able to articulate. I will not do justice to this Gemara. That's for sure true. That I could say definitively. But in other words, it speaks to certain truths which we may not fully understand. And let's give it our best try. Now, by the way, just so we understand the Gemara, how do they view the world? Meaning, first of all, right, flat around? Okay, so it's not clear to me, not 100% clear to me, whether they viewed it flat around, and it could very well be that they debated that very issue, in whether the world was flat around. But in other words, but one thing's for sure, and that is the sky above us. In other words, we just simply view it as, gas, and just... it just continues on ad infinitum, although we know that our universe is not infinite. We know it's a finite universe. But anyway, the way they view the heaven is that it's like a dome. And so basically what you're looking at right now when you're seeing the sky is you're basically looking at a dome, and the stars are basically, fixed on that dome. And what happens to the sun when it sets? The sun sets and it goes into the dome. It goes, according to an opinion we'll see later this morning, it goes through the dome, or over the top of the dome. Therefore, we don't see it. So in other words, the sky is viewed as a dome. And the way that the Chachamim, Chachmei HaGemara, Chachmei Mesorah, the way they understood it is that basically there were Sheva Rikios, there were seven domes piled one on top of the other, and again, Kaviyachol, to the best of our understanding, Kadosh Baruch Hu resided in the seventh firmament, and the Gemara today, fascinating, just fascinating. Gemara is going to give us some way of trying to wrap our head around this idea of the distance between here to the first, to the second. In other words, basically, how long if we had an elevator to go up, how long would it take us to go up to the seventh floor, if you will, giving you a terrible analogy for all this. Amar Rav Shisa Ape Parse Havayama. So the world is 6,000 parsels. Now again, are we talking about the circumference of the earth? Unclear. But in other words, we're going to go with 6,000 parsels. Now we already saw the parsa earlier this morning. The parsa is 4 mil. So 6,000 parsa, that puts us somewhere in the ballpark of, not somewhere in the ballpark. It puts us at 24,000 mil. 24,000 mil is approximately, somewhere in the ballpark. Again, ballparking. Somewhere around 18,000 miles. Okay. Thereabouts. So, v'simcha de rakia afa parsa. Now, the thickness of the rakia. Okay, so this is what I went to describe just a moment ago. That was that firmament. That was that dome. So, its thickness is 1,000 parsa. So, chad de gemar v'chad de svara. Now, point one, tradition. Point two, svara. In other words, we're going to logically deduce it. So, several. Now, we're going to go back to the numbers that we described earlier today. Meaning, I'm sorry, first things first. 6,000 parsas is the world's circumference, or however you want to describe it. That's Gemara, meaning that's a tradition. We just know that because we know that. Part of the Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, as far as the next number that was given, that the thickness of the firmament was 1,000 parsals, so that we're going to mathematically compute. How are we going to do that? So the Gemara is going to go through the numbers. So again, let's go back to what we learned earlier this morning. That the Adam Beinuni, that the average person walks you at parsals, me'alas ha'shachar ne'etzach hama, that is 10 parsals from dawn till night. And hey, mila mishkesach hama, atzitzukoch hama, chamisha mila nimtzu, ov yavshav rakia, echan mishisha bayom. And what did we say? We said that of that 40 mil, so 5 are trekked from the dawn till sunrise, 5 are trekked from sunset to night. So in other words, of the 40, so 10 of those are before sunrise, a combination of before sunrise and after sunset.
The
50. Huh?
50 or 40? 40
is total. In other words, 40 is total. 40 is the total from dawn to night. So, you take now the 5, and you put it over 30. So what's 5 over 30? So that's the 6. So that's what the Gemara means. In other words, if the distance between sunrise to sunset is 30, and I know the ratio between dawn to sunrise and sunset to night is going to be the firmament, meaning that's the thickness, meaning that's the time when the Gemara perceives it. The sun basically goes through the firmament to go to the other side of the dome. So therefore, we're going to basically assume that whatever that ratio is the thickness of the firmament. What is that ratio? So the Gemara says it's 5 to 30. 5 to 30 is 1 to 6. So if the firmament now, right? Am I explaining the ratio well? If the firmament is 6,000 parsos, so then the thickness of the, sorry, if the total distance of the earth is 6,000 parsos, so the thickness of the firmament is going to be 1/6 of that, which is going to be 1,000. Okay. Mezrei Rabbi Yehuda Amar Av Yosher Rakia Achad Me'asara Bayom. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's a Achad Me'asara, it's a tenth. Teda. So again, we start same starting point. An average person works 40 mil over the course of a day. Now he does not have it at 5, but rather he has it at 4. 4 million to walk from dawn to sunrise. 4 million to walk from sunrise, sorry, from sunset to night. Not five, but rather four. So Mishkiyas Chamech says to Kol Chav Amar Bas Milan. So Nim says Ovi of Shorakia Echad Me'asara Bayom. So then it comes out to 1/10, because it is now four over the. Four over the. In other words, it's total of 40. Subtract four from both sides. That's 32. So it's 4 over 32. So it's 1 over 8. I know the Gemara says 1 over 10, but then you take a look at Rashi. Rashi says that basically we'll do the fractions milavar from the outside, not from the inside. And so therefore, you know, that's how the Gemara expresses it as 1 over 10. So, Tiyufta Derava, Tiyufta De'ula. So, I'm sorry. Tiyufta Derava, Tiyufta De'ula. Yeah. Tiyufta. Lema Tehava, Tiyufta Derav Yochanan. So the Gemara says now, seems to go against the position of Yochanan Amalcha and Rabbi Yamama Huda Amre, Rabbanu Dekato Dekachashvan Dekadma VeChashucha. So the Gemara says, look, I really go like the Chachamim, and what about the fact that he expressed the total walk of the day to be 40 mil? Yeah, but in other words, we're describing it leaving early in the morning and late at night, and not exactly starting at dawn. Now, shouldn't this be difficult for Rabbi Chanina? Because Rabbi Chanina had the person walking 5 milin from dawn till sunrise, and 5 milin from sunset to night. So the Gemara says, and the point we raised earlier, no, because remember, we were describing Lot. Lot was running out of the city of Sodom in order to leave a city in destruction. So, right, he's escaping. So one would imagine that, you know, as the city now is burning in a blazing fire, right, and fire is coming down from the sky to destroy Sodom, so maybe his pace may be a little bit accelerated, right? So he walks 5 mil from dawn until sunrise, but the rest of us will, you know, at a regular pace, will go 4 mil from dawn till sunrise. Okay, Adkan. All right, one important point over here, and all the Sagadata comes a halachic point, an extraordinarily important halachic point, which is we're describing over here the amount of time it is to get from the sunset until night. Basically, where do we have it at? So there are a number of opinions in the Gemara, 5 mil, 4 mil. But Rav Yehuda says very candidly, very clearly in our Gemara, it's 4 mil. It takes 4 mil to walk from sunset until night. And so therefore, what it seems like is to get from the sunsetting to what is halachically called night, it would take to walk 4 mil. Let's, for our purposes, say, although this is not agreed to by everybody, but for our purpose, let's say that it takes 18 minutes to walk a mil. So then I'll take the number 18, I'll multiply that by 4. How long is it going to take to get from sunset until night? 72 minutes. Sounds like from our Gemara over here that we're learning, even though there's a lot of Agadata in our Gemara, it sounds like over here that the time from sunset until night is 72 minutes. That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. You can see it right here in our Gemara. It's the second Tosfos on the Samud, where Rabbeinu Tam says 72 minutes until it's night. That means Shabbos ends. When does Shabbos end? Not at sunset, we know, but rather Shabbos is going to end at nightfall. So when is nightfall? So based on our Gemara, Rabbeinu Tam says it's very simple. 72 minutes after the sun sets. So you'll see a lot of Jews in the world who will wait for Shabbos to end 72 minutes following the position of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay? And by the way, who is one of those people who follow the position of Rabbeinu Tam? Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch also follows the position of Rabbeinu Tam. So where does the rest of us stand? Meaning, where do we fall on this discussion? So the Vilna Gaon popularized this position, but really the position predated him as well. And the Vilna Gaon says, no, that's not when it's nighttime. Not 72 minutes, but rather he put it at somewhere in the ballpark of 13 minutes, 13 to 14 minutes after sunset. How do you arrive at that conclusion? It's based on a Gemara in Shabbos. In fact, Tosfos over there quotes, Tosfos right here quotes the Gemara on Shabbos, and if you take a look at the Gemara on Shabbos, you'll see Tosfos has a lengthier discussion about this, where the Gemara over there puts Bein HaShmashos, the twilight period between day and night, at 3/4 of a mil, and the Gemara over there makes it sound like that period begins at sunset. So now move forward 13 and a half minutes. We're now beyond the Bein HaShmashos period. Now it's night. So what you have is a very basic machlokas between the Rishonim, and the Gaon's not a Rishon, but a very basic machlokas, meaning when is nighttime? Is nighttime 72 minutes after sunset? Or is it somewhere in the ballpark of 13 minutes after sunset? So what position do you follow? Well, that's where you consult your rabbi, your local rabbi, and you ask him, when do I end Shabbos? And by the way, it doesn't just affect the ending of Shabbos. It affects the number of halachas as well. By the way, it would also affect the beginning of Shabbos, meaning when does Shabbos begin? So according to Rabbi Natam, you know when Shabbos begins? Okay, I'm going to say it flatly, even though it's going to sound a little kooky, but it's going to begin somewhere around an hour after sunset. Meaning because according to Rabbi Natam, nighttime is not till 72 minutes after sunset. The Bein HaShmashos period, by the way, that's a fixed period, meaning that's 13 minutes. So when does Bein HaShmashos begin according to Rabbi Natam? 13 minutes prior to night. Night is 72 minutes after sunset. Bein HaShmashos begins 13 minutes prior to that. So what's anything before Bein HaShmashos?
Day,
according to Rabbi Natam. So that means that the Bein HaShmashos period doesn't begin, according to Rabbi Natam, until about 55 minutes approximately after sunset. So that means, according to Rabbi Natam, if you were strictly following Rabbi Natam, so you can continue to do malacha well after the sun sets. Okay? You could daven mincha, according to Rabbi Natam, well after the sun sets. Right? If you strictly follow Rabbi Natam. As you would venture to imagine, when Shabbos begins, there, even though we acknowledge, we respect the Shita of Rabbi Natam, but you can only begin to imagine that it's Shabbos, it's an Issa Daraisa, it's an Issa Kares, so we all assume Shabbos begins at sunset, not after sunset, in deference, even though Rabbi Natam's position is what it is. Okay, anyway, that's just a halachic aside. Let's go back to the Gemara. Tashma. Mitzrayim haya arba meos parsa, arba meos parsa. The Gemara here gives the linear dimension of Egypt. It's 400 by 400 parsa. O Mitzrayim echa mishishim b'kush. Now, as big as Mitzrayim is, not nearly as big as Kush. Now, Kush could either be India, could be Ethiopia. You remember the Gemara in Megillah had a discussion of what exactly Kush is, right? Mehodu v'at Kush is a pasuk in the Megillah, Megillah's Esther. But anyway, Mitzrayim is just but a 60th of Kush. The Kush echa mishishim ba'olam. Now Kush is a 60th of the total area of the world. So the world is 60 times greater than Kush. Ve'olam echa mishishim b'gan. Now, how big is the world? It's a 60th of Gan. Oh boy. Talk about now getting to a part of the Gemara where my understanding is not even limited. It's just... just a drop in the bucket. Okay, the Gan, of course, is referring to Gan Eden. Meaning, and there are two distinct places, as is clear from the Gemara. There's Gan, and there's Eden. Right? We always assume that they're the same. It's not the same. It's clear from the Gemara, it's not the same. So, Echa B'Shishim Gan. V'Gan Echa B'Shishim Eden. And Gan is just the 60th of Eden. V'Eden Echa B'Shishim Gehenim. And by the way, Eden is only a 60th of the size of Gehenim. So Nimzikolam Kulo Kikisu Kidera Legehenim. So now we're all said and done. So you know basically, you know what the world is? It's like the lid of a pot. Meaning if the Gehenim is the pot, so the entire world around it, including Gan, including Eden, including Mitzrayim, including Kush, including the whole world, is just but a 60th of Gehenim. It makes Gehenim obviously extraordinarily large. Okay, just even on the agadic level. I mean, we're not even scratching the surface. So Tiyufta, the Gemara points out, you know what makes all this difficult? Meaning, difficult for what we suggested earlier, that the world was only 6,000 parsa. Meaning, if you crunch these numbers, if you compute these numbers, hard to imagine that the world is only 6,000 parsa. Tashma detan debeliyah, Rabbi Nelson, Rabbi Kol Yishu, Kula tachas kochav echad. The inhabited world is all residing under one star. Yoshev Tate, Echad Yoshev. In other words, basically we are under one star, the inhabited part of the earth. Teja shari adam rostinena b'kochav echad holech lemizrachom mekenegdo ola arba ruchos olam oben kenegdo. Because you look up and the star doesn't move, it's still in that same exact place, so you see that it's under one star. Now again, we, are, you know, in our modern mind, we would have a much different way of explaining why stars don't move even though we're traveling, and why the, you know, the moon doesn't seem to move even though we're traveling. So, but okay, it doesn't matter. In other words, they have a particular perception of the earth and the celestial body, and we just simply, in other words, we're just simply looking at it from their perspective. So that's an indication that the entire inhabited earth is under one star. Echad Yoshev, Tiyufta. And once again, the Gemara says, D'tiyufta, meaning, and now you want to tell me that the world is only 6,000 parsecs? Can't be. The size of the star, the Gemara, even the Gemara knows, the size of the star is immeasurable. It's huge. And we have the entire inhabited earth under one star, and you want to tell me that the entire earth is 6,000 parsecs? Just the Gemara says, D'tiyufta. Tashma Eglab itself on the Akrav Bedaron. So Aries, now we are now constellation talk. Okay, what's it called? You want secrets to the secret of the stars? So I brought it with me. I've been reading up on this a little bit. Only makes me a little bit more informed. But in other words, the constellations are fixed. Are fixed from our perspective. They do not move. The constellations in the north always remain north. Constellations in the south always remain in the south. And the sun, by the way, dances in and out of the constellations based on the seasons of the year, because the celestial equinox, right? The celestial hemisphere. If we were to draw a straight line around, right, what to us would look like the equator around the celestial bodies. So the sun goes to the north, goes down to the south, because we rotate around the sun on a 23-degree tilt. I know I went through all that really quickly and didn't explain any of it really well, but the point being is that the sun goes in and out of constellations. Eglab itself, on you're finding Aries up in the north. Akrav Bedaron, Scorpio is going to be in the south. V'chol Yishuv Kulo Einu Yoshev Ela Bein Agal LaAkrav. And the populated earth is between these two constellations, meaning that if we drew lines from the celestial spheres to the earth, you will find that basically no one lives north. I know nowadays we do, but in the good old days, no one lives north of the northern celestial body, the northern constellation, and no one lives south of the southern constellation. And v'chol yishuv kula eino hava ela sha achas b'yom, and it only represents 1 hour of the day. Shein cham nechnasos yishuv ela sha achas b'yom, the sun only goes for 1 hour of the day. In other words, again, just from their empirical look of the world, can't be that the world is only 6,000 parsecs. Teda shebechamish chama b'mizrach v'sheva chama b'marav. The Gemara says, "I'm sorry, I'm over time. Let me just wrap this up." So in the fifth hour of the day, the sun's in the east, and the seventh hour of the day, the sun's in the west. Chatzi shesh v'chatzi sheva chama omeres barosh. For 1 hour, the sun is directly overhead. Kol adam over the head of everybody. So again, just to imagine now that the earth is only 6,000 parsecs, Tiyufta, the Gemara says, Tiyufta, that again seems to be a strong refutation of the fact that the world is 6,000 parsecs. Okay, stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. A little more constellation talk for tomorrow. Just brush up on your constellations. Tomorrow, what interesting views about the earth and relativity, and come back again tomorrow.